interview with Ben Reyes, R-E-Y-E-S, state legislator, Houston, Texas, December 14th, 1974.
You know, you're either conservative Democrats or you're the liberal end of the Democratic Party as far as we're concerned. The Republican Party has very little effect in as far as party politics is concerned. The Socialist Workers Party and the Vasanita Party the same way. So really the struggle here is between conservative Democrats and liberal Democrats, and that's where the power's at right now as far as our folks are concerned, as far as our politics is concerned.
Texas is about the only state in the South that has a fairly large group of liberals. I'm not being impertinent, but what is a liberal in Texas? How do I differentiate between liberals and moderates and conservatives and so on?
Well, a liberal, the way that I would differentiate in them is one, they're looking at progressive legislation. They're more oriented toward people kind of legislation that deals with social programs, with social reforms, with legislation that's going to open up government, because it's been real closed in Texas for a long time, since anybody can remember. It's been very, very closed, and it's been controlled by one group, and that's the conservative Democrat in the state of Texas. I think the difference is that the conservative Democrats are really trying to protect businesses' interests, and liberal Democrats would be folks that are looking for people legislation, social change legislation, trying to open up government as much as possible.
How would they differ, for example, on taxes? You as a liberal, how would you differ from a conservative Democrat?
Well, I would differ from a conservative Democrat in that I'm all for a documents tax. I'm all for as much of not only the documents tax, but also a system where we equalize taxes in Texas, in which everybody pays their share of taxes, not the regular working folks paying 53% of market value and $1.25 on the 100, and business paying 23% market value and 75 cents on the 100, or even worse than that, a business paying, incorporating an area for a school district of their own, just to incorporate the area, 22 students in it, and levy taxes at 8 cents on the 100 and tax 15% of market value. I would be more for a uniform tax system. First, the market value, the percentage of market value set at 100%, where you and everybody else pays the same market value, percentage of market value. Also, a set rate, $1.25 on the 100 or 25 cents on the 100, whatever it is. And also a documents tax that would provide for a vehicle by which we could find out what the values of property were. See, now, the conservative Democrats would like to have it like it is now.
Dad, I want
and
like
a lot
to
of let's go to the back. I can't even. A lot of the conservative Democrats would like to keep it just like it is. You know, with a whole lot of local control stuff. And the local control that they talk about is the kind where the local businessmen that control the local governments are the ones that determine what kind of taxes are going to be set, what kind of percentages, what kind of market value you're going to tax. That would be the difference, the basic difference in a conservative in the way that I would think right now.
Who are there any liberals in statewide office right now?
I guess the guy that you could label that, or the guy closest to that would be Bullock, the controller. And of course the guy that heads up the agriculture here in Texas, John White, supported George McGovern, worked with us real hard on the McGovern campaign.
Yeah, but John White sees himself as a moderate.
Yeah, he does.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that you know, that he can work both ends of the fence is what it means. It means that he's got friends on both sides. It means that he can get away with that kind of, with supporting George McGovern and also getting the conservative support after he finishes supporting George McGovern. White would be the closest. White and Bullock, the guy who just got elected controller, would be the closest to it. We don't really have any real liberals on a statewide level. We had a... The last state convention was the most recent way that we can measure what the percentage of the vote is we've got now, what the percentage of the vote within the party that we've got now, in which we ran a liberal from Houston here, the city controller, Castillo, Leonel Castillo, for state chairman of the party. He got about 41 to 43% of the vote at the state convention. So that,
did that include the black vote?
No, that didn't. That included most of the black vote, and we didn't. We had some black liberals that were supporting the governor's position, and didn't include labor's support because labor didn't support us, which is, you know, labor's normally supporting the liberal candidates. So that was what he did. That without labor and without about, I would say about 12% of the black vote.
You've been in the legislature how long?
This is my second term. This is the second term.
You're about to start your second term?
Second term, yeah, January. Yeah, I won re-election in November.
How large is the Brown caucus?
It was at 11, it's at 14 now. But... you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's a liberal Brown caucus. Even within our community, we've got moderates and conservatives and liberals. This next session, the liberal element of our community, the young guys that are just getting elected to the legislature, are going to be the ones that are in power as far as committees are concerned, as far as the direction that the next session is going to take in dealing with Mexican-American issues and dealing with problems in the Mexican-American community. But, you know, there's only four of us to 10 of them, 10 of the guys that are the so-called. Some of them are moderate to liberal. I think that the Chicano senator, you could say, is close to being conservative. But... yeah, the 10 members of the legislature, what I would label as being moderate. A lot of times they get hung up on some special interest legislation that they're affected by, like legislation dealing with attorneys, legislation dealing with the insurance business if they happen to be in that business, or if they happen to be close to the medical association, or if they happen to be close to the dental association, then they vote very conservative when it comes to issues that affect those folks. And that's why I would classify people like Carlos Truon, Matt Garcia, Bob Vail, most of those guys, I would classify them as being moderates, because they're not liberals. You can't count on them for HMO legislation. You can't count on a couple of them for HMO legislation that would affect, you know, all of our folks. You'd lose them on anything that would be people-oriented rather than doctor-oriented. So I'd classify about 10 of them as being moderate. The other four, which are the young guys, the new guys, Gonzalo Barrientos, myself, Paul Moreno, and Tony Garcia out of South Texas, are going to be just...
is the black caucus
to the left
much more united on people-oriented issues than the Brown caucus? Is that one distinction between the two?
No, you've got a big split in the Black Caucus right now. You've got one of the biggest splits ever in the Black Caucus. In it you have people like Anthony Hall and Sam Hudson and maybe Wilhelmina Delco, the new black who got elected out of Austin. They're going to be very conservative on special interest legislation, like anything affecting the vending industry, and that's a big one that we're after this next time around. Affects Anthony Hall's business, affects all the vending business that he's in this town. And he's going to be very conservative on that kind of situation. He'd vote to just leave it like it is right now, no control at all, and no regulation by the state. Hudson would vote the same way, and Delco has got some real funny ties with the right-wing conservatives in the state. The old John Conley machine, those folks. She's got a lot of ties with those people, so we don't know what she's going to do. We think that she'll probably be one of those that you can classify as a moderate. Anthony Hall and Craig Washington and Mickey Leland and the rest of the representatives from Harris County have a running battle about that thing. Anthony Hall is a guy that will compromise in the beginning. You know, he'll start off in the middle of the road compromising. He'll never take it down to the end. And he always kind of negates the real liberals' position. Because once we get down to negotiating, they don't need to negotiate with us. They've already cut a deal with Anthony, or they've already cut a deal with Sam, or they've already cut a deal with Carlos Truon. They don't have to go as far left as we want them to go. So that Anthony and Carlos Truon, people like that, people that I would label moderates, kind of put us in a bad position as far as our bargaining power. The running battle with Anthony Hall and Craig Washington and Mickey Leland, I think, is over the fact that Barbara Jordan is gonna go to the... She's probably going to get an appointment if we get a Democratic president the next time around. She'll probably get appointed to the Supreme Court or get a cabinet position. When that happens, that congressional seat is going to be open. And they both know it. And they'll both be jockeying for it. It just depends on which one of the two or which one of the three is in the best position to win it. Now, Craig Washington's got a lot of stroke in the Mexican-American community. And that congressional district's about 23% Chicano, about 12% white and the rest black. So the Craig has got him there, but then Anthony Hall has got labor support because his father is the head of the laborers union here in town. So that, you know, all that struggle in the Black Caucus right now is over this congressional seat. And there's not a lot of harmony like folks would like to believe it to be. The national convention, the state convention, we had Anthony Hall went against Castillo on the chairmanship. Right? Craig Washington, Mickey Lee, and all the rest of the blacks went with Castillo. So that, you know, the split is there. And it's as we go on, as we get closer to the point of where that appointment's going to be made and someone is going to take... be running for that congressional district, you're going to see that black caucus just split that much more. Most of the other people are pretty well together in the black caucus. Of course, they're, I would say, and everybody else would probably say in the state that they are a lot closer than the Chicano caucus. But, you know, it's because we in the Chicano community have had Chicanos that have been part of the system, part of the structure, because of their high percentages of population in South Texas in the legislature for so long, that some of them have become just like the conservative Democrats.
What's your own background?
Oh, I've lived in this neighborhood all of my life. I come from a family of sharecroppers out of Hempstead, Texas, which is a watermelon town. My father went to the third grade, my mother went to sixth grade.
I went to school here in the Houston school districts. I went to school at the University of Houston, Texas Southern, South Texas, and been accepted to graduate school at Harvard University this about a month and a half ago. Spent 3 years in the Marine Corps, about 18 months in Vietnam. I had a medical discharge, and I guess it was in 69. Done a lot of community work out here, just a whole lot of voter registration, just voter education, a lot of social action stuff prior to going into politics. And I've worked about 20 or 25 campaigns. My expertise at this point is running campaigns, and I've always done that, and I just somehow got caught up into being a candidate rather than a guy running the campaign, because we got single-member districts out here, and we couldn't find anybody that was, you know, that was of the kind of liberals that, you know, that we're developing to run for the legislature. We were going to have to settle for one of those moderates, one of those Chicano moderates that, you know, that I talked to you about earlier. So I told the guys I'd run, and I ran. It was fairly easy for me. It was fairly easy because I had a lot of experience in campaigns. Done a lot of work in campaigns, a lot of precinct grassroots stuff. And I got elected on a door-to-door campaign. I think I spent $3,600 the first time I ran for the legislature. Of course, I had a very strong base to work from, which is the community you're in right now. I got 97-98% of the vote in this community, and the community I was raised in, that I live in now, votes about 54-55%, which is about 20% higher than all the other Chicano precincts and other Chicano areas in the city. That was a base that I worked from. I started there and went out to my opponent's base and cut in to the youth vote out there, and cut into the labor vote, picked up the labor's endorsement. Then I went out and picked up the black endorsement. Got three or four black precincts that vote. Well, the precincts Barbara Jordan was raised in. So they vote right now. They vote about 65-69%, got about 2,000-3,000 people in each one of them. And every time she's running, it's just a fantastic turnout in those precincts. So I went after that. Won with about 62% of the vote in a runoff the first time around. Of course, I was only 24 years old. I had a black opponent, I had a white opponent, and I had another Chicano opponent in the primary. I got into the runoff with about 48%. I missed the runoff by a few percentage points. About 48%, and the Chicano that was in the runoff with me got about 31-32%, something like that. And I beat him with about 62% of the vote. I think all of that was indicative of the fact that we not only had the grassroots organization, but we had the experience that nobody else had ever had in campaigns. Most of the guys that I ran against at that time, you know, didn't know anything about making their own signs, about the whole silk screening process, about, you know, the door-to-door thing, the voter registration we'd been doing for years. And we'd been doing it just to do voter registration. We didn't really have a plan that we were going to register them to vote to someday help us get elected. But we knew a lot of people that we had gotten registered to vote. We knew a lot of people we had gotten to participate in the political process. And we had a fairly good campaign, even though I had the fact that I was real, real young, running against me real strong because of that conservative element of Chicanos that were still in the Mexican-American community.
Are you going to go to Harvard?
Yeah.
When?
This summer.
Full time?
Yeah, I'm going to go for about 3 months. Take about 6 hours during the summer. I got. If I can get the 6 hours this next summer, I can get credit for 6 hours for the Constitutional Convention that I worked in this last time. I was a delegate to the Constitutional Convention here in Texas.
What are you working toward?
A master's in political science.
I can also get credit for it. For the session prior to the Constitutional Convention.
How did you vote on the Constitution?
I voted against it.
How did the Brown Caucus, did they split on that?
99% of them voted against it.
Why?
I think the big factor that caused most of the Brown Caucus to vote against it, of course, was the right to work issue. People don't want to admit that, but I think that politically, that's the political reality of the whole thing. A lot of people brought up a lot of other excuses, a lot of reasons, the lack of tax reform in Europe, the fact that 73% of the state's revenues were dedicated. But I think the real reason was, a lot of them voted against it, was the fact that they had the right to work law in one shape, form, or another. That was one of the reasons I voted against it. That and a couple of others, but I think that was the main one. I would say that would be true with all the rest of the guys. The only one that voted for it was a senator from El Paso, the guy that is kind of conservative, I think. He's the only one that voted for it.
Since you started watching Texas politics, have you seen any major changes?
Yeah, I've seen some fantastic changes. Hell, I've seen it come from the Connally days, where goddamn people didn't even know there was a state legislature. Where it was so closed that nobody really cared about what was going on in the state because they didn't even know it was there. Well, I've seen it come a long way since I first got involved in it, indirectly got involved in it. I didn't even know there was, when I first got out of the Marine Corps, I didn't even know there was a goddamn legislator in our area. I didn't even know we had one. Much less that there was a Chicano out here that was supposed to be representing us. It's come a hell of a long ways, especially in our community. Now, our community is like the population in this city. You know, the population of Chicanos in this city is increasing about 10 times faster than the white population, about 5 times faster than the black population. I think our political sophistication and political technology is moving at that same speed. You know, like we've already calculated for the 75 presidential election. We've already calculated that we lost 35 delegates to the senatorial conventions because of Ramsey's ripoff on us, because of a third-party ripoff on the delegates to the state convention. You know about...
Go ahead and explain that. I know a little bit about it, yeah.
So we've already calculated that we lost about 30-some-odd delegates to the senatorial conventions over the fact that we lost Chicanos who voted outside of the Democratic Party for the governor. You get delegates to the senatorial convention by the number of votes that are cast for the Democratic Party's candidate
for governor,
in that precinct,
right.
For governor, right. You're like this precinct here, you get one for every 25 people that vote. Okay, this precinct we lost, we had 50-some-odd people vote for Ramsey, so that means we lost two delegates. Okay, we have calculated in the city that we did that to all our precincts here in this area, in the county. We found that the Chicanos, if you look at the census information, Chicanos are all over the place. If you try to plot Chicanos in 400 or more brackets in each census tract, you'll have them all over the place. If you try to go to 1,200 or more, then you'll bring it in a little closer. We found that we've got enough in what is considered white conservative precincts. We've got enough Chicanos where if we can mobilize 10 or 15 people, we can take over the precinct convention and steal a couple of delegates from them to make up for the ones that we've lost. We've started working on that already. We know which precincts we have to go and work. We're going after the ones where we got that have always been considered white precincts where we got over 450 people living in it. We go and find out how many registered voters are in. And we go after that precinct, because if we can get 15 or 20 people to the precinct convention, we can win two or three of the delegates and maybe win the whole thing. We're going to have, in those precincts, we'll probably have opposition from Wallace people. But regardless, those are precincts that we have you know, that the Wallace people or somebody else is counting as being theirs until they get there. We've gotten a Chicano elected citywide here, the city controller, who's just, you know, run some fantastic campaigns, not only in the city here, but when he ran that chairmanship for the state party. We got most of our precinct judges are young and very progressive, and they're very, you know, very hard workers. We've got most of the Chicano staff, well, all of the Chicano staff on this new mayor's staff is young Chicanos that work with us, guys that are 23, 24 years old, just gotten out of college, working on the mayor's staff on different levels, which puts us in a position to get things done for people, which also puts us in a position to get people involved in the political process by helping them get things done. Jobs, getting streets taken care of, old age assistance, programs, funding for programs, job development, manpower programs, all out of the fact that we got a liberal elected mayor of the city. Well, we helped get a liberal elected mayor of the city because we had the kind of young, progressive Chicano organization that you won't find anywhere else in this state.
So one of the biggest changes you've seen is Chicano participation.
Yeah.
Here and in the legislature.
Here and in the legislature.
Anything else that's happened
that
strikes you?
Yeah. I think this has probably happened because of the Supreme Court, of cases that have come out on the one man, one vote rule, which we've got in single member districts. I think the single member districts have been partly responsible for all the progress that we've been able to make as far as the legislature is concerned. I think the single member districts there, and we're looking now at single member districts for city council and single member districts for school board, so that, you know, we can continue getting not only more participation as far as Mexican Americans are concerned, but also as far as the liberal community is concerned. I think the Sharpstown thing did a whole lot to open up government. I think the participation of 8 black legislators have done a whole lot to change attitudes and the minds of a lot of white legislators, quite conservative legislators that we've had to put up with for a long time. I think just the fact that you've got liberals and Chicanos and blacks on the floor make a lot of difference to the white conservative, because when you get right down to just practical politics of running the state, then you find yourself in a lot of positions that you have to sit down and negotiate and deal with a conservative. Maybe help him get what he wants in order so you can get what you need. We've found that a lot of the whites that in the past have just been dead set against anything for minorities as far as social programs and stuff like that are willing to negotiate and deal with us over there. Willing to sit down and say, we got so many votes and you got so many votes and we know you got so many votes and I need your help. And it goes both ways. That, I think just the fact that they were there, that we were there, has had a lot to do with the kind of change we made. Texas Southern University, supposedly an all-black university here in town, and the university has probably got the largest number of Chicanos in the state. Black university's got the largest number of Chicanos in the state. A school that's very sensitive to Chicano needs. It's got 46% of the law schools Chicano there, and it's a black university. This last time around, Texas Southern got its appropriations increased by about $7 million, you know, which just about doubled its appropriations. And it was because of the participation of the blacks and the browns on the legislative Appropriations Committee. That kind of change is there, and it's been like that in the welfare programs and the social services programs, the daycare programs that we've worked for. It's been the same kind of thing. They're willing to say, well, fine, go ahead, y'all need to spend that to take care of some of the problems in your area. As far as the local thing is concerned, our political participation has really changed to a great degree, because we're no longer looking for jobs, and we're no longer looking for a couple of appointments from the administration we have placed in City Hall. You know, we're looking, instead of looking at 5 or 6 appointments by the mayor, which would total up in a whole year, total maybe $100,000 for salaries for those folks, we're looking at the budget. We're looking at the whole budget. We're looking at $270 million for the city. And we're looking at our share of it for our community. We're looking at $15, $16 million to be spent out in this part of town. I think that's come with the fact that, you know, that we've grown politically. And you can't have us help you get elected and expect to give us a couple of municipal judges and a couple of appointments. We want all of that, plus we want to be in on the discussions of developing the budget for the city.
Do you see the mayor is moving into a higher office as a candidate?
Would I say he is?
Yeah. I mean, where do you see him emerging as a statewide candidate?
He will probably. Here's the way I see that situation. I see Benson running for president. Lord help us. We're going to stop his ass if we can. We're going to try to stop him. I think we can. If we do this kind of homework we're doing in this city, if we do this in San Antonio, if we do it in Austin, if we do it in El Paso, if we do it in Dallas to some degree, and in Fort Worth, Corpus Christi, a few other cities, I think we can stop him. I see him moving to run for the presidency. And if we can spoil his favorite son thing, and that's what he's shooting for as Texas is concerned, I think we can do it if we just put the right people together. I know we'll do it in Harris County. I know that now, because we've already started working on it. If we can just get our organization spread out enough, and we've got it pretty well established in Travis County, if we can do that, the kind of stuff we want to do here in this county and a couple other counties, I think we can stop him from getting the favorite son nomination. We can stop that whole process. But if we can't, then he'll probably run. He will be running for president. He will then probably support Hoff Ines for his position as United States Senator in Texas.
Why do you so much want to stop Benson?
Because he's tied too close to the oil companies, to the oil lobby. It'd be no damn different than what we got now, as far as we're concerned. It'd be no different at all. You'd just be shifting from a Democrat, from a Republican to a Democrat, with the same ideas about business, the same ideas about tax reform, the same ideas about people legislation. I don't see any difference in him and Ford and Nixon and the rest of the bastards at all. He ran his campaign against Yarbrough here with a lot of oil money. He came into town, put a fundraiser on, and the fundraiser, to get into one of his fundraisers here in town, you had to pay $20,000 a ticket. Now, our candidates and our kind of folks don't have that kind of money. And along with that kind of money comes a lot of strings and a lot of control from other people. Most of it has come from the oil industry. So that, you know, the oil companies are just looking ahead. They've that horse that they've been on is just about to fall over, so they're going to change horses. That's all they're doing. And the damn thing that bothers me so much is that, you know, that we're having trouble finding a formidable candidate for the President of the United States from the liberal level. Hoff Ines will probably be moving in that direction. Of course, we're going to clash that position, because the mayor and I are very close, probably the closest Chicano to the mayor here in town, because the controller and him stay at odds all the time. But, you know, that's a controller's job to stay at odds with him. But we'll probably clash on that specific issue. And we felt that at the state convention. We felt all of the mayor's people that were at the state convention immediately tried to infiltrate our organization at the state convention.
we purposely would not let them get on our frequencies, on our in on our strategy sessions, and on anything that we were doing to put the Castillo campaign together.
When you say your organization, what do you mean?
I'm talking about the PASO organization here in town, Political Association of Spanish-Speaking Organizations. I'm talking about the Chicano organization, the Mexican-American Democrats, that we formed right prior to, just prior to the state convention. We did not purposely let any Anglos at all participate in that convention process. The whole machine that, to put the Castillo thing together was all Chicanos. We did it for a purpose. We felt that, that if we came in and developed the Chicano community as a liberal, a very liberal organization to the left, an organization that, that did its own thing, that ran its own campaign, had its own PR people, its own strategists, its own political technicians all the way through the campaign process, the convention process, then we could be that much stronger in 75 when we had the white liberal organization that was doing the same thing and developing people within the liberal community, in the white liberal community. We could be much stronger in 75. The whole liberal movement would be much stronger. And not only that, we'd develop our own technicians as far as the state politics is concerned and as far as conventions are concerned.
And it worked?
It worked. Hell yeah, it worked. It worked to a great degree because the conservative Chicanos found themselves working with liberal Chicanos because they were Chicanos. Well, they wouldn't have worked with liberal whites because they were liberal whites. Because they were liberals. They'd worked with Chicanos, liberals, because they were Chicanos. And we found very cohesive kind of thing in the Chicano community, and we got that many more delegates.
Is it fair to say that the leadership among the liberal whites is tired?
I think it needs the same thing that the Chicano community got, the Chicano leadership got when we got into politics, when Castillo got into politics, when I got into politics, when Barrientos got into politics. New people that aren't burnt, new people that haven't cut the deals, new people that, you know, that haven't become the political realist that some of the liberal, white liberal leadership have grown to be.
Is it fair to characterize them that way?
Yeah, I would do that. Yeah, certainly would. Yeah, because you know you got Sissy, you got
some of them still
Billy
fighting
Paul.
The battles of the past. Reliving the 1970 Yarbrough campaign, Sissy Parenthol's campaign.
The leadership, yeah. But see, you know, Castillo in himself brings a new element, you know, to the white leadership, to the white liberal leadership. The guy is just, you know, and I have to bring him in here because he does, to a great degree, provide the only real leadership the white liberals have. And he's a Chicano. But he's a guy that, you know, he's such a damn good politician that he's strong everywhere as far as the liberal movement is concerned. He's a very intelligent politician, and I think that's what's really made him to be the versatile kind of guy that can go and sit down and deal with some of the white liberals that normally would say, you know, the hell with working together within the party, let's get the hell out of here. You know, he can work with those guys, and for some reason, the guy's got the charisma that gives the people the hope, especially the white liberals. That's when you're talking about being tired, that's what you're talking about. They've kind of lost hope in it. And Castillo and the charisma he's got, and the whole thing about him, can sit down with Billy Carr and Sissy Farenthold and the whole rest of the white liberals and bring them together and get them enthusiastic in a damn campaign. Get them enthused about moving the state where they've, you know, you talk to them individually.
Well, there hasn't really been much for them to be hopeful about, has there? Your 60s were dominated by Connally.
It's the same thing in
70s. You got Yarbrough defeated.
Well, it was the same thing here in Houston, in Harris County. And it's been that way for a long time until Castillo came on the scene.
Hell, the liberal Democrats in Harris County were just, hell, you'd go to a meeting and if there were 15, 16 people there, you were lucky. That was a crowd. Now you go to a meeting and I think it's been built. They haven't got that many people elected except the legislators. They haven't. They helped in getting the mayor elected. They helped in the legislative races, but they themselves have not really gained any kind of the control that they need to gain to continue to be a viable organization. So that when Castile came on the scene, well, he brought new life to the guys. He brought new life to our community. For a long time, not only they, but we were also, you know, we'd lose a race and we'd hate the son of a bitch for the rest of his life. And rather than we could be in a campaign and our objective would be to win that campaign, and we'd see this son of a bitch over here and we'd go and cut him up. Forget about the campaign, cut him up, and then come back to the campaign. Of course, that hurts you when you're running a political campaign or when you're running a whole political process. And that's what's happened to a lot of liberals. You know, the state convention was the big thing that we got into, and that's one of the reasons we were afraid of it. You had the white liberals who had so many axes to grind with people that had screwed them along the line. And they couldn't keep the focus on the fact that all we were there to do was to win the goddamn chairmanship. You know, let's do this one thing. You know, once we get this, then we're going to kick his ass. You know, but we'd be going in that direction, and then all of a sudden they'd jump off over here to, this guy was one of the guys that fought us against Sissy, and this guy was one of the guys that fought us against Yarbrough. You know, the running battles that you talk about. And that was a big problem we had with him from the beginning, and we knew that was going to happen. So that the leadership and all the control in the Castile campaign for the state chairman was Chicano. We had one thing on our mind, that was to win that election. We had no access to grind with anybody. We didn't give a damn about who cut up Sissy or who cut up Briscoe. Our thing was to win that thing and, you know, get a foothold into the party. Well, it's been like that on local politics. It's been like that. It's still like that. I think the thing that Castile provides for the whole liberal movement is the fact that he can keep your mind on that one thing. And he himself didn't get carried away with cutting up labor, even though labor was cutting him up at the convention. And they should have been with us. But that didn't bother him at all. You know, he knew what he had to do, and he went out to try to do it. Now, if we could have had a little bit of help from labor, I think we could have won that. And the good thing about that kind of movement is that he got a lot of white liberals to forget about their hassles. Now, some of them you're just not going to get to forget about who cut Sissy up over this or over that. That kind of stuff really encourages me. Hell, I see 75 as being a time that we really just kick some ass in this state as far as liberals are concerned. If we can, you know, get that leadership, it maybe we might not be able to get that white liberal leadership to kind of get the ideas or to kind of get the direction that we've got. If we can't, we'll go and get younger people to do it. We'll go and get other people involved in the process. But I think if we can do it, you know, the smallest degree, if we can do that, we'll find that in 75 we're not only going to control the favorite son nomination, but if we control the favorite son nomination, we're going to be able to control the presidency of the United States as far as the Democratic Party is concerned. That's one of the things that, you know, that we're shooting for, one of the things that we're working for. And that to me is a whole lot. That means a hell of a whole lot to me. I've seen all the power the presidency's got. I've seen not only the power that he's got up there, but that power manifested on the local level in whatever direction he wants to manifest it, whatever direction he wants his country to go in. So that, you know, to me, it's all the first few days of my political career doing voter registration on the precinct level is really coming to light now. And I really see where we're going as far as not only the presidency, but other campaigns are concerned. As far as my own campaign, as far as my own political future, I really don't care where I go, as long as I'm part of seeing the presidency changed in 76.
Well, you'll see the Chicano community in Texas politics, say, in 10 years. You see the election of any statewide officers?
Yeah. I see one. I see the election, possibly the election of a United States senator from Texas in the next 4 or 5 years. I see either a United States senator or a statewide office. Very easily. Because of the direction. The kind of leadership that Castillo has developed within the liberal movement. Within the movement, the labor movement, within the movement of people that are looking for some progressive change in this state. You know, he has in this county got the Wallace people. He's got conservatives that support the hell out of him on tax reform issues. And as far as the liberal movement,
but a good deal is tied to him.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Hell yeah. It's got to be.
He's the only one on the scene.
Yeah. Statewide.
Both Chicanos as well as white liberals.
Yeah. Definitely. A whole lot of it is tied to him. I'd say before the white, the 32-33% white liberal population of this state can do anything, they have to have that 15-20% Chicano and black part of the population being involved with that movement. You know, that's been the problem. I think that's been the problem with the white liberal movement. One, it hasn't had the enthusiasm and it hasn't had the involvement of young people. The McGovern movement bought into the liberal movement. Now that's there. Now the other, they never went out to develop the black and the Chicano communities. They always, they always did the work for them. They always, took care of their thing for them and cut their deals for them and did their bargaining for them. They don't do that for us. And the thing they didn't understand was that if anybody's going to benefit by us developing a strong and a good organization in this state, it's going to be them. Because as long as they got 32% or 31%, all they can do is deal.
Did they see it as competition?
They saw it as competition.
As a loss of power?
They saw it as a loss of power. Yeah. See, our people, the people that we took up to the convention were so